This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. For more than three decades, Fred Rogers captivated, educated, and encouraged kids to embrace their uniqueness on his public television show, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He was an unwavering advocate for kindness, civility, and open-mindedness in a way that might seem almost quaint today. But with the release of a new documentary called Won't You Be My Neighbor, some are wondering if his message might be just what we need in today's world, but also wonder who out there is working to spread that same message. We're going to spend some time today remembering Fred Rogers and his show with Naples resident Melanie Chadwick. She spent 5 days at his Pittsburgh studio at WQED in 1982, interviewing him and members of his crew for a feature in Parents magazine. We thought we'd bring her in to tell her story and play some classic clips from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood along the way. Melanie, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. What's your Mr. Rogers memory or story? To join us, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Melanie, how did you end up getting the job to go and talk with Mr. Rogers?
So I was living in New York City and working part of the time as a freelance writer, and I went to the offices of Parents magazine, and as I was sitting in the office with the editor-in-chief, she said, well, do you have an idea for a piece? And Fred Rogers just kind of floated into my mind, and I said, how about a piece on Fred Rogers? As it turned out, Parents had recently hosted a roundtable discussion on children's television. And Fred Rogers had come there along with lots of other people and apparently had not said much at all. I guess he was out-talked by the other people that were there. And the editor felt bad about that, so she was open to the idea of doing a piece on him.
It was kind of a profile piece.
It was a profile, yes.
So what did Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood mean to your family before you went and did this job?
Well, I grew up in Pittsburgh, and we kind of felt that he was ours because that's where WQED is, and he's from outside Pittsburgh, and he lived in Pittsburgh. I grew up with the show, and the songs meant a lot to all of us, and he meant a lot to all of us.
So you must have been pretty excited then on the first day. You got to spend a week there.
I did, yeah.
Is that how long it took them to produce a show? Or did they produce a show a day? Or,
well, when I was there, as I recall, they were working on a program about divorce.
Oh, okay.
So the first day that I was there, I actually got to sit in his office and talk to him for a couple of hours, just the two of us.
Were you nervous?
I don't remember being nervous. I was very well prepared, although in those days, preparing was meant going to libraries in New York City and looking on microfilm and requesting little brownish clippings from newspapers.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I had done a lot of that. But I was prepared. And when I came in and had this big pile of papers on my lap, he said, you're wonderfully prepared. And that's just the way he was. And
he seems like he was pretty nice to offer the compliments. He seems like he made a point of that.
He always reached through the role to the person. So I was not the interviewer. I was myself. He did that with everyone.
That's an interesting way to state it. He looked through the role, like who you are.
He reached through the role to who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. And he also – I had a number of questions, I guess, written out, and he said – well, I'm not an answer man, but we can talk.
Yeah. That sounds.
And so we did.
Sounds about right. So what surprised you the most about him? Was there anything kind of shocking, or did he seem to be exactly what you would have expected?
You know, that one question that people always ask, and it's always the same question when they find out that I interviewed him and that I knew him a little bit. They get a kind of a funny look on their faces and they say, was he really like that? You know, people want to know, was he for real? And he was, and he was even better than you think watching TV, because when you're in the room with him it's personal all of a sudden. So I had not been interviewing him for more than about 15 minutes, and he said to me, how come you got to, what made you so wonderful? And of course, right away, I'm like squirming with absolute delight, you know, because everybody wants to hear that.
Yeah. Everybody wants to hear, especially from Mr. Rogers.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So what was it like being on set? How did people that he worked with act towards him?
Well, I've been thinking about this. What my strong memory of watching them is that he and Lady Aberlin, who was one of the characters on the neighborhood of Make Believe, were rehearsing or taping, I'm not sure. And as I said, it was about divorce. And it turns out that her parents had been divorced. And there was something in the script that she disagreed with. And she said so to Fred. And he took it out right away, without a word. He took it right out. He changed it in line with her correction. And that stuck with me. I'm, you know, having seen the documentary now twice, I remember the first time I saw it, I was very struck that the people that I interviewed and met during that week were still working for him when he retired. But I thought about it and I thought, well, of course, if you're working for Fred Rogers, where are you going to, are you going to get another job? Are you going to move on? No, you're going to stay with him. He had people just stayed with him. They were so loyal to him because he valued them and because they valued what he was doing, I guess. I can't imagine a better job.
In corresponding with you before the show, you mentioned to our producer a song that was your favorite when Mr. Rogers sings a song called It's You I Like with a young boy named Jeff Erlinger. Erlinger? Is that the name?
I think it's Erlinger.
Erlinger. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that segment and why it's so special to you?
Well, I think this song really goes to the heart. It goes to the heart of what Fred Rogers was trying to do, and it goes to my heart when I hear the words. And I think it's what we all long to hear and we all need to hear from at least one person when we're a child. We need to hear from someone who adores us that it's you I like. It's not the things you wear. It's not the way you do your hair. But it's you I like.
Well, we can listen to it now.
Let's do that.
This just shows you have a lot of things happening to you when you're handicapped, but most of the time. And sometimes it happens when you're not handicapped.
Of course. But you're able to talk about those things.
Yeah.
So well, and help other people who might have the same kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that song that I sometimes sing called It's You I Like?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to sing that to you and with you.
Okay, sure.
It's you I like. It's not the things you wear. It's not the way you do your hair. But it's you I like. The way you are right now, the way down deep inside you, not the things that
hide you,
not your fancy chair, that's just beside you, but it's you I like, every part of you, your skin, your eyes, your feeling, whether old or new. I hope that you remember, even when you're feeling blue, that it's you I like, it's you yourself, it's you, it's you. I like. And it is you I like, Jeff.
Thanks.
And there must be times when you do feel blue.
Uh-huh.
what do you do during those times?
And that was an interaction with a little boy who was in a wheelchair, it sounded like they were indicating. What is that? Right. What does hearing that make you feel like?
Well, it brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. You had to get out the Kleenex before we went on the air.
Yeah. Yep.
It makes me kind of feel a little sad that there's nobody doing that now, that kind of reaching out and just the kindness. Do you feel like there's anybody that's even trying to fill that void? I mean, it would be kind of impossible shoes to fill, but even trying?
On television, you mean?
Yeah. I can't think of anybody.
No, I don't know.
So
maybe the baton has been passed to us.
Yeah, we need to come up with our next hero to speak about kindness.
We just need to be kind ourselves, one person at a time.
Yeah, maybe looking back is not so bad to remember the simplicity of just the piano music and just singing to one another.
Well, remember, too, that Fred Rogers was an ordained minister. He never used the word God on the show. He said that he didn't want to use language that would make some people feel as if they were left out. But that's the source of what he said to children. That's the source of the message. And I thought it was interesting in the documentary that they referred to him as a wide-open Christian. Because to me, being a Christian is a wide open thing. And I think it's too bad in our country that often Christianity is so associated with putting up walls and being closed in. But remember that this is where Rogers drew his strength, and this is the source of the message. And that is still available now. That does not depend on any human being. That is still there for all of us to draw on. And so we're not left alone.
Yeah. If you're just joining the show, we are talking with we were talking with Melanie Chadwick. She got to spend a week with Mr. Rogers and his crew back in the early 1980s before she wrote a feature story for Parents Magazine, which we have linked to on our website at gulfcoastlive.org. If you'd like to join our conversation today, give us a call. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So that piece in Parents Magazine, again, I mentioned we have it linked to our website for Gulf Coast Live. It's on today's show. In that magazine, in that article, it mentions that he was disturbed by the fathers who won't let their sons watch the show because they feel he is a sissy, too gentle to be a good role model for boys. How do you feel we've progressed since the early 80s in regards to that?
I think it's interesting that you brought that up, and I've been thinking about that too. And it seems to be a theme in the documentary, albeit not a major theme, but Francois Clemens, who plays a policeman in the show, was gay and was told by Fred Rogers that he could not go to a gay bar a second time because Rogers apparently was afraid that that would cut his funding from Sears and another company.
He was worried about financial backlash?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did put that in the article, and Fred Rogers later told me that they had been getting a lot of mail in response to the article, and most of it in response to that paragraph. And I didn't ask him, I wish I had, I didn't ask him whether the mail they were getting was critical or supportive. I'm guessing it was supportive, because I think people tend to write when they're supportive, or would write to Fred Rogers when they were supportive. Your question was, do I think that we've made progress? Yes, I do.
It seems like we have, at least from the early 80s.
Yes.
You mentioned that he contacted you after the article. He called to tell you that – did he call to tell you what he thought of the article after he read it when it came out?
I had actually sent him a rough draft of the article against the advice of the editor-in-chief of Parents because I wanted very much for him to be okay with everything that was in there. I wanted to know it was accurate. I knew that I was taking a risk in doing that, but I did it anyway. So he knew what was in there, and he did not take any action to have me take that paragraph out or anything. He did not touch that. So that was not a surprise to him when it was published.
There's another classic piece of sound from Fred Rogers. It's from when he went before Congress in 1969 to argue for the continued funding of public television. And we just talked a minute ago about private funding that he was concerned about losing because of appearances. But he was talking to Senator John Pastore in this, and I wanted to have us hear a little bit of that right now.
This is what I give. I give an expression of care every day to each child, to help him realize that he is unique. I end the program by saying, you've made this day a special day by just your being you. There's no person in the whole world like you, and I like you just the way you are. And I feel that if we in public television can only make it clear that feelings are mentionable and manageable, we will have done a great service for mental health. I think that it's much more dramatic that two men could be working out their feelings of anger, much more dramatic than showing something of gunfire. I'm constantly concerned about what our children are seeing. And for 15 years, I have tried in this country and Canada to present what I feel is a meaningful expression of care.
Do you narrate it?
I'm the host, yes. And I do all the puppets, and I write all the music, and I write all the scripts.
Well, I'm supposed to be a pretty tough guy, and this is the first time I've had goosebumps for the last 2 days.
Well, I'm grateful not only for your goosebumps, but for your interest in our kind of communication.
That is Fred Rogers speaking before Congress in 1969, and it seems like every year when questions about funding come up, that video clip makes the rounds on all social media, and everybody's reminded, it seems like annually, of the appeal that he had in front of members of Congress. Could you imagine something like that playing out in this day and age, that same kind of a conversation?
I don't know. It's interesting that in the course of that, of what he says to John Pastore, he also stops at one point and says, could I tell you the words of one of the songs that I sing? He stops and he asks Pastore's permission. Mm-hmm. And Pastore says, yes, of course. And then he tells him, it's great to be able to stop when you've planned a thing that's wrong and be able to do something else instead and think this song, which was a perfect choice of song when you're in front of the Senate looking for money, that you want them to stop thinking that they're going to cut your funding and you want them to do the right thing. But it's also just so typical of Fred Rogers to ask permission and to make sure that he's made that connection with the person that he's talking to before he then proceeds.
Because it makes the person that he's talking to feel more respected.
Yes.
And that helps in any kind of conversation, dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting, too, because it's asking about changing one's mind. And it seems like people are paralyzed with anger and unable to change their mind in this day and age. You're seeing a lot more of that these days, people backing into their corners and not willing to change their mind. So it's another message that, again, is timeless.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like.
Mm-hmm. But remember, too, that his program was directed at children, ages 3 to 5, maybe 3 to 7 or 8. And so he was speaking to learning how to control yourself, learning how to stop when your hand's raised and you're about to hit someone and bring the hand down and do something else instead.
Well, I feel like adults could probably also use that kind of a lesson. You know, it's been really great talking with you. I could talk with you all day, but we have run out of time. But I want to thank you for coming in. Melanie Chadwick, freelance writer and resident of Naples, thanks for coming in and sharing your stories with us today.
Thank you for having me.
When we return, we'll talk to a man who works to help people learn empathetic listening methods to better hear and engage with racism skeptics and to teach people strategies for changing attitudes, behavior, and group culture through dialogue. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.